his work all at one time. But because he wanted us to have something to do, he left something for us to do. So if we get this encouragement, but this compression of our false ego, completely all the time, compressing our false ego down, and then encouragement up. Mahaprabhu is so merciful, he's so affectionate, no offenses bar one, no problem gets in the way, you can approach him, you can get his mercy, then we'll have the proper balance to be able to understand these places. And if we don't get that, then we can be misled very easily by the externals, either favorably or unfavorably. So we must keep this bearings. So when, again, in this other place when we're going, we should be careful in the same way as I said, we should keep ourselves in a respectful but reserved mood, because those two things together will be most effective here. You can put that on now if you want to read it. Yeah, I'll start now. So this Gambhira is the place that belonged to the king's guru. Kazi Mishra was the guru of the king. The king, Maharaj Prataprudra, would come here to massage the feet of Kazi Mishra and tell Kazi Mishra what was on his mind. That was the nature of the personality. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came first to Jagannath Puri, he came in the month of February, March. He took sannyas at the end of January, February. He came here at the beginning of February, March, just the Falgun month. And then he stayed here around about 5 weeks. And after about 5 weeks, he informed the devotees, Nityananda, Mukunda, Jagadananda, and Damodar, who had traveled with him from Jagannath Puri. He informed them that he now wanted to do what every sannyasi should do. He wanted to travel and preach. He wanted to go to South India, and he said, I want to go alone. I want to find my brother. I think my brother, he's somewhere in South India. I want to go and find him. But inwardly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knew that actually Vishwarup had already left this world. But this was his excuse to avoid the devotees. And then he said to the devotees, Nityananda Prabhu, I can't take you, because you treat me like as if I'm just a wooden doll. I want to do something and you manipulate and trick me and you coerce me into doing other things. So I can't take you. And he said, in Mukunda, I can't take you because you always feel so pained to see me undergoing all these hardships and austerities. And he said, Jagadananda, I can't take you because you always get angry at me. And when I do something you don't like, I perform some austerity, I lie down on the ground, you get very angry with me and you complain. And he said, and also he said, I can't take you, Damodar, because you're always watching over me to see that I'm doing the right thing, checking me all the time and correcting me as if you're my guru. And you're actually a brahmachari, but you're correcting me all the time. So actually, in the criticisms that Lord Chaitanya was giving to these four devotees, he was actually expressing his inner feelings of love. And he was expressing his appreciation for their different moods. But because he didn't want them to come with him at this time, he expressed them in this mood as if they were criticism. So Lord Nityananda, he responded and said, I understand what you're saying, I understand your mind, but please hear one thing. If you go by yourself, what happens if some thieves come, or some robbers, or some violence happens to you? How will we know what's happening with you? Please take one man. And here's a man, his name was Kala Krishnadas. He said, he's a new man, we don't know him very well, he's got a very nice temperament, so no one can be envious why you're taking him and not me. And you take him, he will just carry your cloth and your water pot, and he will just walk behind you, he won't talk to you, and you can go very peacefully. So then Lord Chaitanya went to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who had just recently come to understand his glories. And he paid his obeisances to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and he said, please, I want your blessings, I want to go now and travel and preach. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, inside he was feeling very sad that Mahaprabhu was leaving. But he understood also that he's the independent Supreme Person, and so no one can tell him what to do. So he said, if you want to go, my Lord, surely you will go. But he said, stay a few more days. So he stayed a few more days. Then Sarvabhauma got ready 4 loincloths and 4 outer cloths and a water pot, and he gave all of these things to Krishna Das to carry with him. And then they all went with Lord Chaitanya to a place called Alalanath, which is on the sea beach, on the way down towards South India. And from there, Lord Chaitanya left. And when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was seeing Lord Chaitanya leaving, he fell down on the ground and fainted. An old man, he fell on the ground. And Srila Prabhupada says in his purport that a normal person, when they turn around and see this old man who's just fainted on the ground, they would come running back and they would pick him up and they'd make sure that he was all right. He said, normally you would expect this. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said, he didn't even turn back. He just kept walking. So Srila Prabhupada there, he speaks about how a saintly person is very difficult to understand, because sometimes they can be as soft as a rose, and other times they'll be as hard as a thunderbolt. So at this particular point, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was leaving, he kept walking. So he toured South India, and in the meantime, the king, Maharaj Prataparudra, he heard about Lord Chaitanya, and he approached Sarvabhauma and asked him if he could arrange an audience for him to meet. And Sarvabhauma said, I think that will be very difficult because he's so strict, and definitely he won't want to meet a materialistic person. The king said, please do anything in your power to arrange that I can meet him. So Sarvabhauma said, in exchange, he said to the king, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes back, he needs somewhere to live. Where do you think he can stay? And the king thought for a while, and he said, and Sarvabhauma said, he needs a place that is very solitary and very close to the Jagannath temple. So thinking about these two things, Sarvabhauma said, a perfect place for him would be in the house of Kazimishra. So actually some people say that where we go now and we pay our obeisances to the Gambhira, actually Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his place was downstairs. Sometimes it's said that the room under the stairs is where he lived. And in fact, there is another chamber downstairs. And downstairs, they also do some puja. And the only person who goes down there is the pujari of Radhakanta. And there's a corridor at the back of the Radhakanta temple that takes you down and under. And he can't even take a light. As far as we heard, I cannot guarantee that this is correct, but it's very, very dark, and he has to go just down there, and there somewhere there is something of Lord Chaitanya's, and they put some offering there every day. So there is some worship that goes on below, underneath this place. And sometimes it is said that here on this upper level was where Lord Chaitanya would meet with the devotees when they'd come. And when he went into his nightly pastimes, he would go down underneath. And that there were 3 doorways that had to be, 3 doors that had to be locked and completely sealed for Lord Chaitanya to be alone and solitary in the Gambhira. So Kazimishra, he also lived here, and Lord Chaitanya lived here. And he stayed here for 18 years living in this place. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's daily activities were that in the morning he would go to the temple to see Lord Jagannath in the early morning. And he would get Lord Jagannath's darshan. Then he would come back here. And then by about midday, he would go back to the temple and see Lord Jagannath again. And then he would go down to the sea beach. And at the beach, he would take his bath and do all of his activities. Then he would come back via Siddhubakul, where we'll go next. And there he would meet with Haridas Thakur, and sometimes Rupa Goswami, sometimes Sanatan Goswami also stayed there. And then after he had seen him, then he would come back here. Then he would take prasad. Sometimes he would take prasad here. Sometimes he would go to the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya or other Vaishnav Grihasthas here. Or during the 4 months that the Bengali Vaishnavas were here, they would call Lord Chaitanya to their residence and cook for him regularly. Then after lunch, he would have a big prasad taking. He would rest. And in the evening, all of the Bengali devotees would meet here, and they would all go down from here to the Jagannath Mandir. And just as we did last night, of course, at the time of Mahaprabhu, the big wall that is now around with the four gates, as far as I understand, it was not there. But in the same way as we did last night, he would take four Sankirtan parties. 1, 2, 3, 4. And they would have 8 mridangas and 32 pairs of kartals. And they would go down and they would circumambulate around the Jagannath temple again and again and again, circumambulating around. And Lord Chaitanya would dance. And in each group, Advaita Acharya would dance in one, Nityananda would dance in another, Srivas would dance in one, and Vrakreshma Pandit would dance in another. And in this way they would have Sankirtan round and around and around the Jagannath temple. And then they would come back and then they would have some prasad and then they would take rest. And this was the nature of their life. So I remember when I was a very, very new devotee and reading the Chaitanya Chaitamrita, and I was thinking, that would be so boring. Nothing else. That's all they did. Get up in the morning, chant a little bit, go and see the deities, go and see the deities, chant some more, go and see the deities. You know, and I was thinking, because I myself didn't get much taste from these activities, I was thinking that this would be a very sort of a static kind of a life. I didn't think it would be ecstatic. But actually they were so deeply immersed in transcendental mellows that just by chanting and dancing like this, they would be weeping and crying and feeling so much. So Lord Chaitanya's mood living here in Gambira, it is like the mood when Uddhava came to Vrindavan with a message from Krishna and Dwarka to give to Srimati Radharani. And Srimati Radharani at that time, Krishna had left Vrindavan. And we hear in Mahaprabhu's own words, Yugyayatam Nimishena. So a Nimishya is like an infinitively small amount of time. And a Yuga, we know, is a huge amount of time. So Lord Chaitanya was expressing himself that we say one moment becomes like 12 years or more. So this was Srila Prabhupada's translation to give us some conception. Because if you say one moment becomes like a Yuga, what's a yuga? We don't know what a yuga is. But it's not 12 years or more. It is 12 years or more, but it's not 12 years. It's a yuga. Thousands and thousands and thousands of years was what one, not even a second, felt like to Srimati Radharani, because this is the intensity of her love. Just like if there's something that we like, we honestly can't say in this world that we love anything. Because there's no experience of love. There's nothing lovable in this world. Because all we have is objects and conditioned souls. So conditioned souls are self-centered. So I'm self-centered, you're self-centered. So what is lovable in that? Practically, when people say, I love this, I love this. What do they mean? This I like. I enjoy the taste of this. I like this person. But you cannot actually say love. Because love means that everything in my being is everything is for the person I love. I don't want anything back. I don't need anything back. I'm completely happy giving every single particle of me to pleasing this person. So one time in San Francisco, there was one devotee, young devotee at that time. His name was Upendra. And Upendra decided that he thought he should get married. So he said to Srila Prabhupada, I think I want to get married. And Srila Prabhupada, in this very deep mood, said to Upendra, he said, oh, all right, you can be married, he said. And Upendra said, so how do I find a wife? Something like that. And Srila Prabhupada looked out the window. He pointed out the window, not even to devotees. And he said, pick a girl, any girl. And Upendra said he was so shocked. And he said, but Prabhupada, what about love? And Prabhupada looked at him very, very deep and he said, love? Love? And then he became very grave and he said, love is meant for Krishna. So this was the contrast that Srila Prabhupada was trying to show us, that this world there's nothing and nobody who's lovable, because everyone is conditioned soul or inert matter. And no one can give your whole heart to anything here. And therefore this loving propensity, also sometimes known as rag, or one's attachment, it spread like this throughout the whole of everywhere. And people love this music, but they also love that music, and they also love sports, and they love this kind of food, and they love this kind of car, and they love this kind of clothes, and they love girls that look like that, and boys that look like that, and they'd love to have a house like that, and on in this word, love, 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 like. But actually, it's just spread so thin over meaninglessly trivial things. This is the material atmosphere. But these Vaishnavas, eternal associates of Mahaprabhu, and the gopis of Vrindavan, the cowherd boys, the residents of Vrindavan, they are composed of love. They have transcendental forms that only are made of love. There's not one atom of their being that isn't love for Krishna. This is what it means. This is what love means. So way beyond our ability to comprehend is this loving sentiment that these devotees feel for one another. But we can hear, and by hearing and hearing and hearing, gradually something comes within our heart. So when Uddhava came to Vrindavan, he saw Radharani was lying there. She looked like a golden doll. She looked like she had melted into the ground. She was completely lost in separation from Krishna. She wasn't eating, she wasn't sleeping, she wasn't talking, she was just only like mad in this transcendental ecstasy. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Oh, where is the son of Nanda Maharaj? And sometimes the gopis would say to her, don't feel this deep unhappiness. Krishna is coming. Look, he's just there. And she would jump up and look. And then, no, he is not coming. Again, she would be crying. And these very deep, deep sentiments were what Krishna himself wanted to taste. This love, this was her love. He wanted to taste it himself. He couldn't understand it. This is not because he's limited. He's unlimited, but he was the object of her love. So he had to place himself in the position of somebody who is loving himself to understand what it feels like to love himself in that way. This is Lord Chaitanya. Krishna goes in this form, he appears, his heart has the sentiments of Radharani. His complexion is like Radharani, but it is Krishna himself. So Lord Chaitanya lived here in Gambira, in this mood of deep separation. And in his later pastime years, the last 12 years, when the Bengali devotees came, Lord Chaitanya would be very out with them in this way, doing these different activities of kirtan and so forth. But when no one was here, he was lamenting and crying and crying and lamenting when he was here in Gambira. Very, very deep transcendental emotions that he was tasting. And in the night, they would lock the doors and he would not sleep. He would bang his face against the wall, crying, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Oh, where is the son of Nanda Maharaj? Please bring him here. Please, where is he? And Swarup Damodar and Ramananda Roy, they would sing songs to enhance his mood. They would intensify his mood. They would direct his moods of loving Krishna in this way. They were serving in this way. Swarup Damodar and Ramananda Roy, Adalita and Vishakha Devis. The topmost two of the gopis who are always serving Srimati Radharani to assist in pleasing Krishna. So they were here in this form to combine and assist Lord Chaitanya to taste these deep emotions. And sometimes he would escape from here and they would not hear him chanting, 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 and they would open the doors and they would find it was empty, the room was empty. And when he would rub his head against the walls, he would make blood come on his face and he didn't notice and he didn't care. He would continue. And so the devotees would become so pained when they would see this. So they had one devotee, Shankar was his name. And Shankar had to sleep in there or had to stay awake in there all night with Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya would lie on his lap. He'd put his head on his lap. And he was frightened to do this because Shankar would be there. He couldn't rub his head against the wall. His presence would reduce the intensity of his emotions. And then Lord Chaitanya would rest and then Shankar would nod a little bit and then Lord Chaitanya would come and then Shankar would wake up and then Lord Chaitanya. So in this way, the devotees were trying in any way possible to pacify Lord Chaitanya with his deep moods of separation. When Lord Chaitanya would go from here, to the Jagannath temple, his mood was different. And then again, his mood was very different again at Rath Yatra time. So we'd like to talk about those things in the different places that we'll be going. How Lord Chaitanya experienced this mood of Radharani and the residents of Vrindavan towards Krishna here in Jagannath Puri. Now one other thing is about Radha Kanta. How did these deities come here? So the story as I have heard it is that the father of Maharaj Prataprudra, his father, his name was Maharaj Purushottam Jana, and he lived in Cuttack, and he was the king of Orissa at the time prior. And he was a very, very powerful, pious king. So one time, the king from, I think it was, forgotten which, one of the South Indian states, and his capital was known as Vidyanagar. The king of Vidyanagar, he came here to Jagannath Puri, wishing to arrange a marriage between Maharaj Purushottam Jana and his daughter. And he came here at the time of Rath Yatra. So the king came from Cuttack and he stood as usual, as is always, or has always been the custom, and with a gold-handled broom, the king was sweeping the street in front of the Rath cart. In other words, exhibiting the mood that I am the humble servant of Lord Jagannath, the Lord of the universe. So the king would do this. And when he would do this sweeping, then when Lord Chaitanya later, Maharaj Prataprudra, when Lord Chaitanya would see this, he became very pleased. But this king, when he was sweeping, and the other king saw, he had a different sentiment. And he thought, what is this? This king, he's supposed to be so strong and powerful, but he's sweeping the street. And so he felt a little bit undoubtful about the fact that he'd make a suitable husband for his daughter. And very quietly and tactfully he left. So the king knew that the other king had come, and after the Rath Yatra, he asked his ministers what happened with the king. And they explained that the king had come, and they understood somehow or other that the king, they could understand what was in his mind, and he had left. So being a Kshatriya and very chivalrous, the king took this as an insult against Lord Jagannath. And he decided to go to the kingdom of this king and attack him. And actually retaliate, because they were fighters, so they love to do this. Kings love to fight with other kings, just like if you give one child a sweet, another child loves to take it out of their hands, and this is not quite natural. So very natural for Kshatriyas to fight. So he went, and he attacked the city of Vidyanagar, and he was defeated. Now this was most extraordinary, because he had gone to fight on behalf of Lord Jagannath, and he was defeated. And he came to know that the reason that he was defeated was because this king of Vidyanagar worshipped Ganesh. He had a big deity of Ganesh, and he was praying to Ganesh for protection, and Ganesh protected him, and Maharaj Purushottam Jana was defeated. So the king came back to Jagannath Puri, and he went before Lord Jagannath, and he said, I cannot understand your mercy. He said, you have arranged for the servant, for your servant, to be defeated by the servant of your servant. This is not correct. So he was very disturbed that he's worshipping Lord Ganesh, and I'm worshipping you, and he defeated me, and he's worshipping a demigod, and I'm worshipping the Lord of the universe. This should not ever happen. So this was his sentiment. So then Lord Jagannath appeared to him in a dream and told him, you go back and you fight again. He said, this time you will be successful. So then Lord Jagannath and Lord Balaram, before the battle took place, before the king left and got his armies together, they mounted two horses. A black horse rode Lord Balaram, and a white horse rode Lord Jagannath. And they set off in front of the king, and they went. And as they proceeded in front, they were way ahead of the king and his armies. The king had no knowledge of this. They came to a particular village, and Lord Jagannath was thirsty. Lord Krishna was thirsty, and he asked one lady who was a yogurt seller, old lady, that please we want some yogurt to drink. And she said, you can have some yogurt, but it will cost you. It will cost you so many annas you have to pay for it. And he said, no, no, you can give it to us. No, 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 I can't give it to you. I'm an old lady, I'm poor. You have to pay for it. But then Krishna said that if you don't, we don't have any money because we're coming on behalf of the king, he's behind. So we can't pay, but when the king comes, he'll pay for the yogurt. And the old lady said, no, 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 how do I know your king is coming and how do I know he'll pay me and I'll go and ask him and he won't respect me in any way, so I want the money now. And so they said, no, 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 we will give you one ring. And Lord took one ring off his finger and gave it to the lady and said, when the king comes, you tell him that the soldiers going ahead have taken the yogurt and show him the ring and then he will pay you. He will immediately understand everything. So the old lady had the ring. And then the king entered that village with all of his armies. And the old lady came up and she said, I want my 30 annas for the yogurt. And he said, what? And then she said, your soldiers who were going in front of you, they took my yogurt and they said you'd pay. I have no soldiers going in front. All my soldiers are here. No, no, no. Two soldiers ahead, they said that you would pay. I don't know what this is. So then she produced the ring. She said, they gave me this ring and said, I show this ring to you, you'll pay me. So the king looked at the ring and it was a ring that he himself had personally given to Lord Jagannath. And when he saw that ring, his whole body started trembling and his hair stood on end and he became completely ecstatic and he realized who these two soldiers were who were going ahead. And he was thinking then how he had said to the Lord, you know, I am your servant and you have allowed your servant to be defeated by the servant of your servant. And Lord Jagannath was saying, no, I am your servant. And so he had actually gone ahead of the army. So the king then, at that place, he wanted to give that old lady everything. He didn't want to even go any further. He didn't want to fight. He didn't want anything. He just thought, she's so fortunate that she got to see Krishna and Balaram in this way. So he took a brass, what they would do, make a brass plaque, and he would write on it. She could have so many things, and he gave it to her easily. And then he proceeded on towards Vijayanagara. And of course, when he fought this time, he was successful. And as a result of the fight, the king in Vijayanagara had one deity whom he was very attached to. And that was the deity of Shakshi Gopal. We've heard the story of Shakshi Gopal. And another deity, the king's personal deity, was the deity of Radhakanta. So Maharaj Purushottam Jana, he offered respects to the deities and asked them, please, you come back to my kingdom. So he gave the deity of Radhakanta to Kazi Mishra to take care of. And then he gave the deity of Shakshi Gopal and a beautiful peacock throne that he gave to Lord Jagannath, and also the deity of Banda Ganesh, who is still worshipped in the Jagannath Mandir, the Ganesh that protected the king the first time. And he also brought back, along with these deities and this beautiful throne, he brought back the princess. And when he came back here, he called Kazi Mishra, or I don't know if Kazi Mishra was here, but he called his ministers, and he said, here, you take this girl, you can have her. And he said, go around the kingdom and find a street sweeper. Marry her to a street sweeper. Oh, and the princess was crying and crying. And everybody was thinking, this cannot be, she's a princess. But the ministers went out and they looked everywhere to see if they could find a suitable street sweeper to marry a princess. And they looked through all of Jagannath Puri and they found no one. So then the king's ministers said, you just wait for some time. So of course, when the time of Rath Yatra came again, the following year, then Maharaj Purushottam Jana was there in front of Lord Jagannath with his golden-handled broom, sweeping the street. And at that time, the king's ministers brought forward the princess and said, this princess should be married to a street sweeper. So she is your queen. So she became the wife of the mother of Maharaj Prataparudra. So then Radhakanta were being worshipped here. And then when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left, then as I said, there were two lines. There was Vikreshwar Pandit, who was taking care of the Gambira on behalf of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And there was the line of Kazi Mishra, who were taking care of the worship of Radhakanta. So after Vakreshwar Pandit, the next person who became in charge, his name was Gopal Guru. And Gopal Guru Goswami was also very special because as a young boy he had known Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as a sannyasi. And one day Mahaprabhu, as his pastime, because we can understand the Supreme Lord, he has no veins in his body, he has none of the ordinary human inner organs or demands or pushings or anything like that. But in order to act these pastimes of Naralila, human-like pastimes, if Lord Chaitanya never ate or if he never ever evacuated, everybody would know he's not human, he's not ordinary, he's someone extraordinary. So in his own divine pastimes, he enacts all these human-like traits. So one day Lord Chaitanya had a lota in his hand and he was going out to the bushes, and with his other hand he was holding his tongue and he was walking out. And this young boy Gopal, he saw him and he said, "Oh my lord, what are you doing?" And Lord Chaitanya, he said, "Gopal, I'm holding my tongue." And Gopal said, "Why, my lord?" And he said, "You see, because now I'm going to do latrine. And at such a time, my body is unclean. So at such a time, I should not be chanting, because the body is unclean, it is an unclean act. So I cannot stop chanting, I'm always chanting, so I'm holding my tongue to stop it from chanting." And Gopal looked at him and he said, "Oh my lord, this is not correct." And Lord Chaitanya said, "Oh." And then Gopal said, "You can chant anywhere, you must always chant, even if the activity is impure, you must chant, because at the time of death, then everything takes place, the body is so impure at that time, but at that time you have to chant and chant and chant, so if you are holding your tongue and not chanting, this is not right, you should chant all the time." And Lord Chaitanya was so pleased with this little boy who was instructing him, and he said, "Gopal, this is correct. What you're saying is completely correct." He said, "You have spoken so nicely that you are like my guru. So now I will call you Gopal Guru." So as a little boy, his name became Gopal Guru. And he grew up, and after Lord Chaitanya left, he was given the charge of the Gambira. And so he was also doing the worship of Radhakanta. So at one time, Gopal Guru, he became older and older. And Dhyan Chandra, his one disciple, was growing up and taking care of so many things and writing. And Gopal Guru also wrote a padati, an instruction, and they put them together into this form to teach people how to meditate, remember Krishna whilst one is doing deity worship, and then to go deeper and deeper into the meditation on Krishna. This is called bhav seva, that we serve Krishna with our sentiments, not with... First it is the deity worship where you're serving with your physical hands, your physical mind and under physical rules and regulation. But the development that takes place for somebody who worships very purely is that one begins to remember Krishna all the time. And along with the physical activities that you are doing and performing, there is a deep meditation on Krishna's pastimes and serving Krishna in that mood. So Gopal Guru, he wrote many things on this subject. And then one day he told his disciples, he said, "But now I am very old and it is time for me to leave. And now I am going to go back to Vrindavan. I'm going to the spiritual world." So one day when they were all having kirtan and everything was very, very, very sweet and they were chanting and chanting, Gopal Guru, appearing very tired, he lay down. And they were chanting, 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 chanting. And as they were chanting, he left this world. And they saw he is gone. And they were all crying and crying and crying because he was such a dear associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Dhyan Chandra felt like he had lost his treasure of his life. So he performed all the appropriate samadhi rituals. They placed his body in samadhi. They did everything properly. Then Dhyan Chandra had to face the responsibility of taking care of the Gambira alone. And this was difficult because the king at that time, the present king, was giving a lot of difficulty and he was wanting to take over the Gambira and make it more and more under the auspices of what he wanted. So Dhyan Chandra was feeling very, very heavy-hearted. First he had this weight of responsibility. Then his guru had just gone. Then here he is alone. And one day a brahmana came. And he came into the temple and he said to him, "Oh, you know, I am coming from Vrindavan. I have just returned from Vrindavan and I saw your guru there." And he said, No. My guru has gone into samadhi. I placed his body in samadhi myself. He is no longer here." And he said, No.
Your daughter's crying.
Your daughter. And so he said, no, I placed him in samadhi myself. And he said, no, I saw him in Vrindavan. He's just near Vamsivat. I promise you, I saw him sitting under a tree. He was chanting. He's alive. And Dhanchandra said, "I don't believe it. It's impossible." But then he decided, "I'm going to go and find out." Because what could you do if somebody said, "Oh, Prabhupada is... he's alive and well. He's in Jagannath Puri. We'd all get on trains and come immediately to see if it was true." So Dhyanchandra made a great effort and he went all the way to Vrindavan. He went to Vamsivat. And there he saw Gopal Guru. And he was alive. And he was sitting under this tree chanting very, very peacefully in Vrindavan. And Dhyanchandra said, "My Guru Maharaj, you have thoroughly cheated me. What have you done? I have just put your body in samadhi and you're here. I cannot understand this." And Gopal Guru was very quietly chanting and chanting. And Dhyanchandra said, "Now that I've found you here in Vrindavan, I'm not going back to Puri. I'll stay here for the rest of my life in Vrindavan with you." And Gopal Guru said, No. He said, "You must go back because someone has to take care of the Gambira." And Dhyanchandra said, "No, I'm staying here with you." And he said, "You come back with me." And Gopal Guru said, No, I am in Vrindavan." So then he said, "Then I am in Vrindavan." And then Gopal Guru said, "All right, I'll tell you what you should do." He said, "You go back to the garden, which is known as Siddhabakul, where we'll go soon. And you find one neem tree there." He described the tree, what the tree would look like. And he said, "You get that tree cut and you make one deity of me. And you take that deity and you place that deity in the mandir. And through that deity, I will speak to you. I will take care of everything. I will be completely present in the form of that deity. Whatever you want, I will do anything through the form of this deity." So Dhyanchandra, he was convinced to return, and he came back, and he made that deity. And that deity is the deity that we saw, the yellow neem deity. This is Gopal Guru Goswami. So Gopal Guru has been sitting here in Radhakanta Math for hundreds of years now. And practically speaking, the point that I understood when I came here is that the people come here and they stay and they go. Human beings come and they go. And sometimes they do well and sometimes they do bad things. But the person who is taking care of the worship of Radhakanta is not the pujari who sits and sometimes asks for money. But the person who's doing all of the worship is actually in the form of that deity, is Gopal Guru. And one time I was told that if you come and pray to this deity, he will answer you. Whatever you want, he will take care. He will reciprocate. He's a very... magnanimous and immediate reciprocator. And so for years when I would come here to Jagannath Puri to do different things, usually to buy saris, which is quite a worldly thing to do, I would immediately come here and I would pay my obeisances to that deity and pray to that deity and seek his help. And I found so much reciprocation with that deity. So I wholeheartedly recommend any of you, if you have the time when you're here, or at a different time if you want to come back. The temple is closed in the afternoon. The bar, it's closed. We can find out what time it opens. But if you have any time to come and sit before Gopal Guru, he's very, very, very nice, very friendly and warm and very amenable, actually very easy to approach. And I used to find when I'd come from Jagannath to Vrindavan to Puri, but I'd feel like I was going to visit a person. You know, when I come to Puri, I go visit Gopal Guru and see Gopal Guru and talk to him a little bit. And sometimes when I would have some difficulty, I would sit for a long time in there and just in my mind I would just talk to him and share my different difficulties or my lack of faith or my lack of understanding or my needs with him. And many, many, many times I saw very immediate reciprocation from that deity. So that is Radhakanta, a very old, ancient deities. If you come in the morning, I don't know with this new pujari, or this, not new, but this particular pujari, the pujari before, he was quite generous in giving darshan at times when one would come and that where the deities were actually supposed to be closed. So if you came any time in the morning, he would willingly give you darshan. But as Harikirtan and family found out last visit, was it? You spent a lot of time here chanting. This is a very nice place to come. In fact, I think probably by the time we leave, all of you are going to understand that 4 days is not enough time in Jagannath Puri. A week is not enough time in Jagannath Puri. Because Jagannath Puri is very small. It's smaller than Mayapur and much smaller than Vrindavan. Everything is quite contained. So going, if you want to see all the places, you can do that in 4 days. But if you want to develop a depth of feeling for these places, one will want to come back again and again and again. And it's very easy to get around here, either walking or by rickshaw. It's very easy to come and to travel from place to place. So now we should go into the take darshan. Hopefully they're still open. If they're not, we should come back at a different time. And you've given already a donation there, yeah? So we should just...